This is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. We talk about snowpack a lot in our region, but that's because for most of us, the precipitation comes in the winter, not during growing season. So we rely upon snowpack to store up water for when we need it in the warm months. But are we measuring accurately how much water is stored in the snow? Our next guests say we could do better. A pair of researchers at Oregon State University published a paper in February suggesting some new ways to view snowpack and water. David Hill is a professor of civil engineering at Oregon State University. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Christina Aragon is a PhD student and the lead author on the publication. Welcome, Christina.
Thanks for having us.
So we've been talking about snow water equivalent for a long time, but I gather some information was missing from the usual calculations. Who wants to go first there?
Nina, why don't you go ahead?
Sure. So really what we're doing here is in this new metric that we defined snow water storage, we are looking at both how much water is held in snowpacks and for how long. So a lot of the previous metrics looked at either how much there was on, say, one given day, such as April 1st, or they looked at how long there was snow, so the number of snow-covered days. So the nuance here is that we are combining how long and how much with this new snow water storage metric.
So take us into the weeds a little bit here. How does snow water storage differ from snow water equivalent?
Dave, I'll pass it off to you. I think you have some great analogies to you.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I've thought about this, and like one way of thinking about this is maybe consider that you're training for a marathon, right? You want to spend a few months sort of getting ready to go, and in the end, you know, your training doesn't really depend upon just the longest mileage day you did before the marathon. And it doesn't really depend upon maybe the fact that you ran for 30 or 40 really short days. So kind of you can think of your training as sort of being an integrated quantity over that training period. You know, how many days were you out and how long were you out for each day? And so it's really that cumulative thing that we're interested here when we're talking about snow water storage. It's not just the April 1st snowpack. It's not just the fact that there was snow on the ground for, let's say, 120 days. But it's that sort of time and amount combined. That's really the new angle.
Talk about that April 1st snowpack issue, because that seems to be a very important date and amount as currently used to figure out the quality of our snowpack.
Right, and so the history behind that, you know, the reason for April 1st is that traditionally 50, 60, 70 years ago, they were making snowpack measurements, but they didn't have instrumentation like we have today that can be measuring all of the time. So measurements were manual. People would go out at the beginning of every month, you know, January 1st, February 1st, and so forth. And so you would get five or six measurements sort of throughout the snow season. And April 1st is kind of the time when most of our snowpacks are at the maximum. And so that number, that April 1st date, has really just sort of become this gold standard as being representative of how much snow do we have at our max and, you know, how much water can we count on during the summertime. But that date's really not the best measure, because even in Oregon here, we have plenty of locations where they measure snowpack, and you can see that the snowpack maxes out at the beginning of March. So that April 1st number is a useful metric, but it is not sort of the be-all, end-all for snowpack information.
So Nina Aragon, using the new measurement and going back through several decades of measurement, which I gather is what you did, what did you find?
Yes, we found several things. One, mountain regions are essential for storing snow in our landscape. So across the U.S., we have an average of 72% of our annual snow water storage occurring in mountainous parts of the country, despite these regions only covering 16% of the U.S. land area. So mountains are extremely important. And if we look at these mountain regions, we've seen that over the last four decades, snow water storage has declined by 22%.
And in terms of the quality of what we're getting up there, I mean, was there anything that indicated that snow water equivalent as measured now might net less water than in, say, 1994?
One of the things that we have seen, and this is something that's not really surprising given other snow literature that's out there, But there's a lot of places where we're seeing more intermittent snowpack. So we're seeing places where the snow comes and goes throughout the snow season. And that's where a metric like this really shines, because it's still able to account for some snow water storage, regardless of if the snow disappears for a time and then comes back.
And so I haven't asked about the particular figures you use in snow water storage. How is that expressed, you know, a what of what?
Snow water storage for this study is expressed in meter days. So that is that cumulative sum, or that integrated area under the curve.
Okay. Similar then to something like degree days in heat measurements?
Exactly.
Okay, got it. We are talking to Nina Aragon, a PhD student at Oregon State University, and David Hill, professor of civil engineering, about their research into snow water storage, a new figure they've come up with to calculate what's going on with our snowpack as differentiated from snow water equivalent. They published a paper in Hydrology and Earth System Sciences in February. So, David, if I'm a water manager, say in Medford with its big snowbank up there in Mount McLaughlin, how might I start thinking differently about snowpack?
Well, that's a great question. And I sort of like to think about things in terms of some just kind of big picture numbers here for a moment. So if you kind of consider the whole globe, right, we have water that is stored in lakes, we have water that is stored in reservoirs, and we have many of those here in Oregon, and we have water that is stored in the snowpack. And if you look at the entire globe, the amount of water that is stored in reservoirs is about 4,000 cubic kilometers of water. Okay, that's a huge amount of water. Now, if you consider the northern hemisphere, and if you look at how much snow in a usual year is, how much water is stored in snow, it's about 3,000 cubic kilometers. So the storage of water as snow is equivalent almost to what we store in reservoirs. All right. Now, as we sort of move forward, and if we think about maybe temperatures getting warmer in their future and having more rainfall than snowfall, we start to lose that storage capacity of snow on the landscape. And so then it becomes a question of, well, where are we going to put it? So water managers have this sort of portfolio of infrastructure that they can be thinking about in terms of where can they put water so that they can match up supply and demand. Surface reservoirs are great, but we aren't building a lot of new surface reservoirs, and in many cases, we're taking dams out. Groundwater recharge programs are another option in terms of temporarily storing water. So I think kind of one of the messages here is that we currently store an awful lot of water as snow, and if that starts to change, water managers are going to start having to think about other options.
Oh, some other kind of intervention to make sure that the water stays available instead of just evaporating? Okay, so David, as you look at the winter just ended, is there anything with this year's snowpack that helps tell the story of your research?
Well, yeah, actually, this has been a very variable year for snowpack. You know, so I'm up here in Corvallis, and so our sort of go-to is up at Saniam Pass or Willamette Pass, let's say. And a lot of the snow sensors there have been on this sort of up and down roller coaster ride, which is not what we usually see. So we got a lot of snow sort of in December, and then most of it went away at the beginning of January. We got some more snow back. It went away again. And so it's been really this kind of back and forth of having snow and not having snow. And that's a little bit different from what we're used to seeing, which is sort of a long, steady increase in the snowpack throughout winter towards spring, and then that nice, steady decline. So we're certainly seeing more variability, like Nina mentioned.
So, Nina, did it not used to be that way? I do, you know, and I can totally relate to what David's talking about, because I do check the snow water equivalents on a fairly regular basis, and I watched them go up and down over the course of this winter. Did it used to be more of a gradual build and a gradual taper off?
Exactly. So part of the analysis that we did in this work was to look at a bunch of the snow monitoring stations and evaluate, has there been more of this variability, snow disappearing, coming and going throughout the snow season? And there are a notable number of stations where we're seeing this increased variability is increasing over this 40-year period that we looked at. So that is a big trend over a lot of these snow monitoring sites.
snowpack and what it gives us for water during the growing season is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Nina Aragon is a PhD student at Oregon State University. David Hill, professor of civil engineering at OSU. They are the co-authors of a piece published in February about their new metric for figuring out water storage in the snow. Now, Nina, you just published recently. Have there been any conversations about water authorities adopting your metric?
There have not been yet. Quite a bit of interest in the article, though, even from some different science podcasts up in Canada and EOS, which is a science publication. So I think right now we're just kind of getting the word out about this metric.
What your research shows does seem to buttress what we've been hearing for years now relative to climate change, that it does not take much difference in temperatures for what might have fallen as snow to fall as rain instead.
Exactly. That's contributing to that variability we're seeing in the snowpacks and is part of the reason why we think this metric could be useful for monitoring as we anticipate going into a future where we see increases in this variability with climate warming.
Nina, what was the starting point? What prodded the research into life in the first place?
Started through some analysis that Dave was doing. Dave, do you want to speak to that?
Well, sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of always interested in looking at sort of new perspectives or new ways to sort of look at information. And this idea sort of came to me about 4 or 5 years ago, largely when I was kind of looking at studies that people have done and how they just were really focused on this traditional metric of just like the peak snow in the given season as that having that be sort of what is the most important. And I just started to think that there was more of a story to tell. You know, if you think about it, you know, as we have sort of snow sort of coming and going throughout the season, it's doing many things. When we have snow on the ground and it's warming, you know, that is sort of slowly percolating into the soil. And so that's a way that we actually recharge the groundwater. And that snow on the ground, you know, as it sort of comes and goes, it's important because when it's there, it can provide habitat to different types of species. So I just sort of started to think that the more useful story was kind of this integrated look over the snow season of how long is there snow on the ground and how much is there, and can we kind of come up with a unifying number to help describe that.
Do you have any research either planned or already done in the basically as the dry season takes over and what happens to the snowpack and how it moves down from the hills?
Well, I would say that we haven't, you know, with looking at this metric, this is really sort of a retrospective analysis in terms of us looking at what has happened over the past 4 or 5 decades. I'm not personally sort of taking this metric and trying to look at it in a forward sense. That becomes a little bit more complicated. But what I will say is, you know, the analysis that we did was something looking at trends over a long period. Let's say 40 years is the period that we used. But when you look at that 40-year period, you know, the trends downward in many locations aren't necessarily sort of constant. You know, at the beginning of that period, maybe there was a sort of slight decline, and that decline seems to be sort of increasing as we move forward. So even in the past, like, 10 to 15 years, if you look at that period, the rates of decline start to become a little bit more severe, which is something I think certainly worth keeping in mind.
Nina, were there any particular aha moments or, you know, things you, when you're going through the data, you went, oh, wait, didn't expect to see this?
I think the big aha moment was really when I was starting to work with this metric. I was like, okay, how is this useful beyond the metrics that we already have? And as I was looking at stations specifically in Oregon where there are a lot of lower elevation sites and we're seeing that increased variability, the aha moment was, oh, the reason that this metric is really useful is because it is adaptable to snowpacks that are being impacted by climate change and this increased variability. It's a metric that we could use potentially to evaluate how snowpacks are predicted to change in climate model simulations just because it is highly flexible in both space and time.
The research publication is called Changing Snowwater Storage in Natural Snow Reservoirs. That's the actual paper published in Hydrology and Earth System Sciences back in February. Christina Marie Aragon is the lead author, PhD student at Oregon State University. Thank you, Nina.
Thank you.
And David Hill is the second listed author, professor of civil engineering at Oregon State University. I expect we're going to be hearing a bit more about snowwater storage in the years ahead. Thank you, David.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We'll be back.